Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Tony Harrison is National Trustee for South Dakota's Fraternal Order of Police. He attended the FOP's National Conference recently, and he joins us now with an update. Captain Harrison, welcome back.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
All right. You were up in Seattle, and now you're still working on the road here. You're doing
I'm doing FOP business all over.
Give us an update.
I'm doing some business now for the county. I'm in Riverside, California, meeting with Riverside County Sheriff's Department, along with Rapid City PD, and we're just doing a working on a little project here. We can talk probably more about down the road sometime. But
absolutely.
Kind of enjoying the weather. I won't lie, it's 70s here, which is
now,
glamorous compared
now,
to
stop.
What we're
You're
with.
Just being mean now. That's just not even.
Well,
all right.
Makes it feel better. Seattle was rainy the whole time and cool. So
that does make me feel better. All right. So let's go to Seattle in the FOP National Conference. Tell us a little bit about your role as national trustee. What does what's your job there?
Well, actually, as a trustee for South Dakota, the Fraternal Order of Police is the largest law enforcement organization in the world in terms of fraternal organization. There's about 325,000 members, and every state has a representative on the board of directors, of which I am the South Dakota representative. And so twice a year we get together just to handle the business of the order and make decisions as any other business would run. And so we met in Seattle and had our spring board meeting. That's where we handled business and took care of some items and, addressed issues and established committees that needed addressed to be established. And we had a good time.
Is the FOP more vibrant in some states than others? Do you see that, or is it pretty much thrive in every state?
Well, it's not. There's FOP members in about every state in the union. However, only 46 states have a state lodge. And you have to have a state lodge to have a person on the board of directors. So, but it is much more vibrant on the East Coast, where it started just over 100 years ago now in Pittsburgh. And Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania is the largest state lodge. We have about 40,000 members in that area. Ohio is very big. In fact, one of the fastest growing states right now in the FOP is California.
Really?
Who are growing by the thousands. And Texas is also growing very big. So, it's a good organization to be a part of. It's like every organization. You're not always going to agree with everything that comes out of there. But as a whole, we look out for law enforcement issues first because that's what we do.
And what are some of those law enforcement issues that were addressed at the national level?
Well, obviously, we have lots of issues that we look at and deal with. Number one, our big primary main event every May 15th is a National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Service held on the Capitol lawn. Because May 15th is National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Day. So every May 15th, we meet at the Capitol lawn where we honor the officers who passed away the year prior. So, for example, this year, there's 199 names going on the National Wall. Now, people say, well, was it 109 officers that died this year? No, there wasn't. 129 officers died in 2017. The other 50, or whatever the number is related to, like, 9/11 deaths. There's 52 officers just from New York who passed away this year from 9/11 illnesses. So they're obviously memorialized the same because their disease or their injury came from a law enforcement on-duty event. Mm. So 52 of them.
Wow.
Now, I will tell you, different this year than ever before, it's happened for the first time ever, is we in the past, and a good example is Rapid City. In 2011, when Officer Ryan McCandless and Officer Nick Armstrong were shot and passed away, they're both on the wall because they died in the line of duty. Now, they're not on the wall together. They're in two different spots on the wall. So you got to find one, then you walk down and find the other one. Starting this year, for the first time ever, we looked at putting officers together who passed away in the same event if the family approves of it. Mm-hmm. So, for example, had Nick and Ryan's family approved of it, they'd have been put there side by side. And that's happening this year on three different cases where there's multiple officer deaths in one event.
Mm-hmm. When an officer dies on duty from natural causes, is that also honored at that time?
Well, it depends. if the officer's death occurs and is related to medical condition, mm-hmm. for example, a heart attack, if there's a significant event 48 hours prior, then the answer would be yes. If there's not, the answer is most likely no. So, for example, John Bechtold, sheriff, Campbell County, South Dakota, in 2007, I believe it was, came upon a crash. He's a one-man sheriff with one deputy underneath him, came across a crash, was doing CPR on the young victim of the crash, suffered a heart attack, and passed away. Mm-hmm. So his name is on the National Memorial Wall because it qualified under that event. Now, had he just been working, you know, in the office, writing paperwork, and potentially passed away, that wouldn't necessarily qualify as a National Memorial death criteria because it wasn't that event that happened prior.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And so as we talk about this national conference, you know, the business, and, you know, we talked about the memorial service, what else? What are the other top, you know, issues that need to be addressed?
Well, one of the issues that we talk about a lot is the FOP is very lucky in the fact that we have a member from Arizona, the national trustee from Arizona named John Arlano, who is on the national, I forget the acronym for it, but he is on the national committee, which looks at bulletproof vests and what makes them, what level criteria it makes. So basically the classification of a bulletproof vest that officers all over the country wears, you know, the NIJ determines what is or isn't a qualified vest under a grant, you know, has to stop this round or has to stop that round. Well, we have a member from our fraternal organization who sits on that committee. He knows more about bullets and vests than I've ever heard. And when he speaks to you, I can't even follow because it's very complicated, but he's very good. And that's one of the cool things about our organization is we are very connected to the large government associations where we have a seat at the table. And so, you know, a member from Arizona who I can pick up and call any day can tell me all about the classifications of bulletproof vests, how they work, how they're changing, and what's required. So that's one of the cool benefits.
When you see...
Another thing that we,
yeah, go ahead.
Just one of the other things we talked about, we had a, as you know, Captain Mike Walsh from Minnehaha County Sheriff's Office sits on the diversity committee. And of course, diversity isn't about black or white or any other color. It's about diversity across all levels. And one of the things that they did is they brought in a gentleman from Atlanta who spoke with us about it's called One Cop, One Church, One Precinct, that they're doing down in Atlanta right now. Now, this gentleman, he's a reverend, was a very outspoken community organizer, you could say, and was probably, he would tell you, maybe a little negative towards law enforcement. Well, down there, they put him through a shoot, don't shoot scenario. And when he went through that scenario, he got his eyes opened about how hard it really was to make those split-second decisions. And the decisions he was making was on a computer screen or in a scenario where they're using paintballs, not a real-life shooting scenario. And so he's really changed his mind and changed his tune, and he's working very hard to collaborate with the FOP to potentially take some of this, you know, basically one church, because obviously the faith-based community is strong in a lot of our communities. And so there's great people in there that if we can help plant a cop inside that community, that church community, we can reach more people, you know, get the support that we need, that we always are desiring to have the support of our faith-based groups. Mm-hmm. And they're well connected to that community as well.
Right.
So we talked about stuff like that.
So when you look at South Dakota and we talk about diversity, and you know, being, you know, age, gender, you know, race and ethnic background, what kind of efforts are you bringing home or really bringing to the national conference from South Dakota that have already been implemented here in the state in regards to diversity? How diverse is the FOP in South Dakota and what are we doing to increase that diversity?
Well, you know, the nice thing about the FOP in South Dakota is that we are the largest fraternal organization in the state, and we have about 1,200 members, which is nearly a good chunk of all law enforcement in the state. So quite honestly, we're diverse in the fact that nearly everybody who's in law enforcement is somehow involved in one way or another. Now, the other part about what this does, this helps obviously with recruiting. You know, we all want to have good diversity in our recruiting, you know, law enforcement is just not the big, strong white guy's job. It is anybody's job who wants to do it. And the nice thing about stuff like Captain Walsh is doing is he is really he's out in the community. He attends, or he's attended a mosque a ceremony. He has attended some of the Jewish synagogue ceremonies, and he does a real nice job of leading by example and being involved to show the community that we live in how important they are to us in law enforcement.
You mentioned, and if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Captain Tony Harrison. He's with the Pennington County Sheriff's Department, but he's also the National Trustee for South Dakota's Fraternal Order of Police. And Tony, you mentioned, you know, those split-second decisions and how different they are viewed by law enforcement officers who live them than by the rest of us who maybe watched news coverage of something that went wrong that we're struggling to understand. So when we see a national news story, because we're not seeing a lot of these stories coming out of South Dakota, what are those questions that, you know, viewers and regular citizens should be asking about those scenarios where there's a situation that just seems like things went wrong and police officers used excessive force? What are the smart questions for us to ask as we evaluate that coverage?
Sure. Here's the best way to get the answer to that, and that is this. If your local community has a Citizens of Police Academy, go attend that. I know in Rapid City and Pennington County we've done them. I know in Minnehaha County they've done them. I'm sure other places have done them. So I think the South Dakota Troopers have an academy of some sort. But those are the best places to go where you can sit, and they'll put you through scenarios. They'll talk to you about what the state laws say about what we can and can't do, and what's reasonableness, and what's the Graham versus Connor standard, and what is the... you know, why do they do what they do? Why don't they shoot the guy in the leg instead of shooting him in the chest? Those questions are answered. And if you don't have that in your community, I would encourage you to go talk to your local sheriff or your local police chief and ask those questions because it is a difficult decision. And I've never actually had to fire my duty, my weapon in the line of duty, but I've been mighty close more than once. And I've worked with tons of guys who have had to do that. And those decisions, they are not easily made. And so you have to understand the foundation of, you know, that why. The biggest thing we get, why do you shoot them in the leg or the arm? Well, I'm going to tell you, when you get an adrenaline dump like you do in the event you have to pull your firearm and actually go to use it, you know, the physical actions that happen to your body with your vision, with your hearing, you can't control any of that. And so there's times that you can't take the time to say, okay, I'm going to fire and hit this guy in the leg because I think that's the best thing. You don't have the opportunity to do that. You know, they train us to shoot with sufficient volume and accuracy to stop the threat. That's what we do. We don't shoot to kill. We don't shoot to maim. We don't shoot the gun out of his hand. We shoot to stop the threat. And obviously you have to aim at the largest target, which is center mass. And that's why you're taught to aim that way and shoot that way. But until you come and learn those lessons about why we do it, you know, and I will tell you a good example. If you ever do go out recreationally shooting, sit there and shoot 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 rounds into the paper target, then put your gun down. And then do 10 push-ups, 10 jumping jacks, 10 sit-ups, and pick your gun up and shoot 10 more rounds. And look at the complete and total difference that you will have in those two targets. The second one will be a mess because your body is breathing heavy and your adrenaline is moving and your blood is pumping. It's not, you know, shooting on a line like you see in a training video. It is real-life scenarios and real-life events that make it very difficult for you to pick out those little tiny small arms and leg targets. And so you can't do that. And you won't find an agency out there that teaches people to do that either.
Tony said there's times that, you know, you came close to having to discharge your weapon. And I'm wondering about the other stories that law enforcement officers might tell that we don't necessarily hear in the media and the times that you didn't discharge your weapon that maybe in retrospect you should have. And you're sort of processing that as well. Just every time you come home from a scenario like that, what is that conversation like between cops?
Well, I will tell you this. I have talked to many of my brothers and sisters I work with about it. My wife is a good example of I've called her many a time, and as soon as she says hello and I say hello, she says, "What's wrong?" Because I sound totally different. It is stressful. It is, it's heavy with anxiety and nerves, because you don't want to have to think about what's going to potentially happen, but you have to be able to process it and deal with it if necessary. And what's rugged in today's day and age with people who so often second guess what we do is you have to think about, if I do this, what's the results going to be to my family and to my kids at school if I happen to have to do this? And that's something that we shouldn't have to worry about, but it is. And so what I would tell you, the conversations are always tough, but they're real and they're honest. I believe in South Dakota we have great support from our communities. I believe we do. I know we do. Some other areas don't have that same luxury as we do. So we're pretty blessed here to have that. And we're grateful of the communities that listen and that listen to your radio station that do support us, because it's needed, and it's very, very needed for all of us.
Tony Harrison, National Trustee for South Dakota's Fraternal Order of Police. Recently, he attended the national conference in Seattle. He's a captain with the Pennington County Sheriff's Office. Thanks so much, Captain Harrison. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.